You Forever by Tuesday Love Sang Grandpa, read to you by Blue Friend, August 2016, Lesson 15. It is an old custom throughout the world to store one's loved treasures in the attic, treasures which one holds on to for old time's sake. Often they will lie half forgotten in the attic until, probably when one is searching for something else, one goes up those usually difficult stairs and prowls about in the dusty, musty, cobweb-laden semi-darkness. Here's the old dressmaker's dummy reminding one irresistibly of the passage of years for a dress made on that would no longer fit. There may be a case, or more than a case, of old letters. What are they, tied with blue ribbon or pink? As one looks about, one comes across things which one had almost forgotten, things which revive affectionate memories, and revive memories of sad times, too. Do you often prowl about in your attic? It is worth a visit every so often, for some useful things are stored in attics, things which bring back one's memories, things which add up to one's general knowledge. Problems which confronted us in days gone by may have been swept aside effortlessly by newfound knowledge, by experiences gained, lessons learned through the passage of the years. But in this particular lesson, we're not going to ask you to go into your attic. We are going to suggest that you come with us. Follow us up the winding wooden stairs with the old handrail at the side. Go up those creaking wooden stairs, which makes one feel that they're going to break through at any moment, but they never do. Come with us into our attic, browse around, for this lesson and the one after will be in the rooms of our attic. In it we have all sorts of little pieces of information which may not necessarily fit into a separate lesson, but they will be of undoubted interest to you and be of value. So think about our attic. Read on and see how much of this applies to you, how much of it clears up little doubts, little uncertainties which may have nagged at your mind or plagued you for some time. We browsed about quite a bit while we were preparing this lesson. We poked around in various odd corners, upsetting quite a few theories and raising a lot of dust. We concentrated on the people who concentrate too much. You can work too hard, you know. We are quite aware of the old saying, a man was never killed by too much hard work. But we maintain that if one works too hard at concentrating, then one travels backwards. In our work, we frequently get letters from students who say, "But I try so hard. I concentrate and concentrate, and all I get is a headache. I do not get any of the phenomena that you mention." Yes, that is a little treasure that we may stop a while and examine. One can often try too hard. It is a quirk of humanity, or, possibly more accurately, a fault of the human brain, that if one tries too hard, one makes no progress whatsoever. In fact, in trying too hard, one sets up what can only be termed as negative feedback. We all know the stodgy fellow who really plods on through life, always trying and trying and trying far harder than anyone else would, but he never gets anywhere. He's always in a state of confusion and uncertainty. Again, when we overtax our brains, we generate an excess charge of electricity that actually inhibits further thought. You may not be an electronics engineer, but if electronics and electricity were used in the study of human brains, then those studies would be greatly facilitated. The human brain has much in common with electronics. Do you know, for instance, how the ordinary radio tube works? There's a filament which is heated by a battery or from the mains. That filament, being heated, gives off electrons in a completely uncontrolled manner. The electrons flow off, and they stream off like a maddened crowd going to a football match. If these electrons are allowed to roam without being controlled in any way, then they are quite useless in radio or electronics. In a tube, we have a glass envelope. The filament is in the envelope, and as it gets hot, the electrons are radiated everywhere, but that is useless. We want those electrons to be collected on what is known as a plate, which is in close proximity to the filament. As things are, if there was only the filament and the plate, the process of collecting the electrons would be wild, uncontrollable. There would be distortion of a radio program or whatever it was we were trying to receive. Engineers found that if they interposed what they termed a grid between the filament and the plate, and they introduced onto the grid a negative current, then they could get control of the electrons between filament and plate. So this grid, which is indeed a grid, it is often a wire mesh, acts as what is known as a grid bias. If one applies too much grid bias, then no electrons will flow from the filament onto the plate. They are all repelled by the grid. By altering the grid bias to a suitable value, the control can be as desired. Back to our brain before you are tired of radio. When we concentrate too much, when we really bend our brains to a problem, we all too frequently apply negative grid bias, which has the effect of inhibiting thought completely. So, we must not try too hard. We must be sensible about it. We must at all times remember the old Chinese adage, softly, softly, catchy monkey. We must go about our concentration in such a manner that our brains do not become tired. Do only that which is within your capacity. Take the middle way. The middle way is an Eastern way of life. It means that you do not have to be too bad, but on the other hand, you do not have to be too good. You have to be something in between. If you are too bad, the police will get you. If you are too good, then you will be a stuffed prig, or you will be unable to stay upon this earth, because it is a fact that even great entities who come to this sad world of ours have to take some form of disability, some quirk of character, so that while upon earth they are not perfect, for nothing perfect can exist upon this imperfect world. Once again, do not try too hard. Try to do a thing naturally, within reason, within your capacity. You do not have to go around offering slavish adherence to anything said by others. Use your common sense. Adapt a thing or a statement to suit yourself. We might say, "This is a red cloth," but you might see it differently. To you, it might be pink or orange or even light purple. It depends upon the conditions under which you saw that cloth. Your lighting may be different from our lighting. Your sight may be different from ours, so do not try too hard, nor adhere too slavishly to anything. Use common sense. Use the middle way. The middle way is a very, very useful thing. Try this middle way. It is the way of tolerance, the way of respecting the right of others, and of getting your own rights respected. In the East, priests and others study judo and other forms of wrestling, not because the said priests are belligerent, but because in learning judo and similar forms of fighting, one learns to control oneself, one learns self-restraint, and above all, one learns to give way in order that one may win. Take judo. In this, one does not use one's own strength in order to win a battle. One uses the opponent's strength in order that he may be defeated. Even a very small woman, knowing judo, can defeat a hulking great brute of a man who does not. The stronger the man, the more fiercely he attacks, the easier it is to defeat him, because his own strength causes him to fall more heavily. Let us use judo, or the strength of the opposition, in order to overcome our problems. Do not tire yourself or wear yourself out. Think out a problem that's bothering you. Do not evade the issue, as so many people do. Many people are afraid to look at a problem. They skirt around the edges of the problem, probing tentatively, but never getting anywhere. No matter how unpleasant a subject is, no matter how guilty you may feel about a thing, get right down to the root of your problem. Find out what it is that troubles you or that frightens you. Then, when you have discussed with yourself every aspect of the problem, sleep on it. If you sleep on a thing, it will be passed to your overself, who has much greater understanding than you have, for the overself is a great entity indeed compared to the human body. When your overself, or even your subconscious, can examine the problem and come up with a solution, they will often pass the solution into your consciousness, into your memory, so that when you awaken, you may exclaim with delighted amazement that now you have the answer to that which was troubling you, and which, from thence on, will trouble you no more. Do you like our attic? Let us move on to another little treasure which is lying about collecting a bit of dust. It is time that we looked into it, gave it an airing, and let it see the light of day once again. And what is in this package? Well, let's open it and see. Too many people nowadays think that to be truly good is to be truly miserable. They think, most mistakenly, that one has to go about with a grim, sad face if one is religious. Some people may be afraid to smile, not necessarily because it might crack their face, but it might, which is much worse, crack the facade of their thin veneer of religious belief. We all know of the grim old man who is nearly afraid to smile or is afraid to take the slightest pleasure from life in case he has a miserable time roasting in hell for a moment's lapse from grace. Religion, true religion, is a joyous thing. It promises us life beyond this earth. It promises reward for all that we have striven for. It promises us that there is no death, nothing about which to worry, nothing of which to be afraid. There is a fear of death ingrained in most humans. And that is because if one remembers the joys of the afterlife, one might be tempted to end this life and go on to happiness. That would be the same as a boy escaping from the classroom and playing truant, which does not lead to progress. Religion, if we really believe in it, promises us that when we go beyond the confines of this world, we shall no longer be in the company of those who truly afflict us. We shall no longer meet those who grate upon our nerves, who sour our soul. Rejoice in religion, for if you have the true religion, it is indeed a thing of joy, and a thing about which one must rejoice. We must confess with great sadness that many people who study occultism or metaphysics are among the worst offenders. There is one cult, oh no, we're not going to give names, who are perfectly sure that they and only they are the chosen ones. They and only they will be saved to populate their own little heaven. The rest of us poor sinning mortals, no doubt, are going to be destroyed in various heartily unpleasant methods. We do not subscribe to this theory at all. We believe that so long as one believes, that is all that matters. It doesn't matter if one believes in religion or in occultism. One must believe. Occultism is no more mysterious or complicated than the multiplication tables or an excursion into history. It is just learning of different things, learning of things which are not of the physical. We should not go into raptures if we suddenly discovered how a nerve worked a muscle or how we could twitch a big toe. They would just be ordinary physical matters. So why should we go into raptures and think that the spirits are sitting all around us if we know how we can pass etheric energy from one person to another? Please note that we say here etheric energy, which is good English, instead of prana or any other Eastern terms. We prefer, when writing a course in a language, to adhere to that language. Rejoice. The more you learn about occultism and about religion, the more you will be convinced of the truth of the greater life which lies ahead of all of us beyond the grave. When we pass the grave, we merely leave our body behind us in much the same way as one can leave an old suit of clothes to be collected by the garbage man. There is nothing whatever to fear in metaphysical knowledge, nor is there anything to fear in religion. For if you have the right religion, the more you learn about it, the more convinced you will be that it is the religion. Those religions who promise hellfire and damnation if you fall off the straight and narrow path are not doing their adherents a good service. In the old days, when people were more or less savages, it was possibly permissible to wield the big stick and try to frighten some sense into people, but now the outlook should be different. Any parent will agree that it is much easier to control children by kindness than by constant threats. Those parents who keep threatening to call in a policeman or the boogeyman or to sell their children are the ones who cause a neurosis in the child and, later, in the race. But those parents who can control by firmness and kindness and have their children living in joy, they are the ones who produce good citizens. We wholeheartedly subscribe to the view that one must have kindness and discipline. Discipline should never mean harshness or sadism. Again, let us rejoice in religion. Let us be the children of the parents who teach with love, with compassion, and with understanding. Let us do away with all the falseness, all the baseness of terror and punishment and eternal damnation. There is no such thing as eternal damnation. No one is ever discarded. There is no such thing as a person being banished from the spirit world. Every single person can be saved no matter how bad he or she has been. No one has to be rejected. The Akashic Record, with which we shall deal later, tells us that if a person is so terribly, terribly bad that nothing can be done with him, for the moment he is merely delayed in his evolution and is later given another chance to come along with another round of existence, in much the same way as a child who played about in class and should not pass the end of term examinations. He does not move up to a higher grade with his fellows, but is kept back to study the curriculum all over again. One would not say that a child is toasted over a slow fire or tossed to hungry devils for mastication because he skipped some of his lesson work or played truant a few times. The teacher assigned to him might talk to him rather more firmly than he liked, but apart from that, no harm would come to him. And if he were expelled from that particular school, he would soon have to enter another or be in trouble with the truant officer. So with the humans on Earth. If you mess up this chance, don't be too disheartened. You will always get another. God is not sadistic. God is not out to destroy us, but to help us. We do God a grave disservice when we think that he is always on the lookout to tear us to pieces or toss us to the waiting devils. But if we believe in God, let us believe in mercy, because in believing in mercy we shall have mercy. But let us also show mercy to others. And so to close this, we cannot repeat it too often. No such things as eternal torments. There are no such things as fires which are going to singe your skin off and make you feel awfully hot about the whole affair. Examine your thinking. Examine that which you have been taught, and think how much more reasonable it is that you should have joy and love in your religious belief. You are not responsible for a sadistic father who is going to beat you up or send you into perpetual darkness. Instead, you are dealing with great spirits who have gone through all this long, long before humans were ever thought of. They have been through it all. They know the answers. They know the troubles, and they have compassion. So, from our attic treasure we say, rejoice in religion. Smile about your religion. Have a warm feeling about your God, no matter what you call him. For he is ever ready to send down healing waves to you, if only you will get this terror, this fright, out of your system. But now, it is time for us to leave this attic of ours and to go down the stairs again, those old creaking stairs. But soon, in the next lesson, we shall ask you to rejoin us in the attic once again, for, looking about, we see there are quite a number of little items lying on the floor or on the shelves around, which will be of interest and, we hope, profit. May we see you in the attic in the next lesson? End of Lesson 15.